The end of 2019 and my NRL 22 rig this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are going to wrap out the 2019 season with a overview of the NRL 22 rig that I have pretty much settled on and will probably be shooting for the rest of the 2019 to 2020 season with maybe possibly one or two changes. We'll see. The rifle in front of me started life as a Tika T1X. This is a great base class rifle, in my opinion. It's very accurate right out of the box. We are still running the factory barrel, factory action, and factory trigger on this setup. So, really great rig out of the box, but it does have one glaring problem, and that is the stock. Now, the stock does have the ability to add a vertical pistol grip to it, add a beaver tail fore-end. You can obviously add comb spacers to raise your comb height. All of this is allowable within the NRL 22 base class rules. But one of the things that you really can't do is you can't change the length of pull on it, at least not easily. There are some other ways to go about that. And it is a fairly lightweight stock. This is great if you are a young gun shooter or a smaller statured female shooter that wants a lighter weight gun, but it is not what I wanted. And then secondly, I wanted a 22 that was very close in handling characteristics to my centerfire PRS rifle. So we went with the Modular Driven Technologies ACC chassis. Now, of course, we are sponsored by Modular Driven Technologies, and they were nice enough to send us out the chassis. And this is the exact same chassis that works on the T3. So the only difference here is you have to remove the magazine release for the T3 version in order to fit the T1X magazine. Otherwise, the mag release pushes against the magazine. So as you can see, I do have a magazine inserted for demonstration purposes here, and the magazine well completely protects the magazine here. You can run it hard against the barricade and not worry about jamming up your magazine or damaging the magazine. And while it does protrude here in the middle, which makes it very easy to get in here and change magazines, now that I've said that, it'll give me trouble. But I've never had problems getting the magazine out whenever I need to do so, because it is easily accessible from the sides and you have enough space up front to hit the T1X magazine release. But it's still protected in there, so if you jam it against a concrete block or a chair, whatever, you're not going to break the plastic magazine. Not happy they're plastic magazines, but they work fine for me. I haven't had any issues with them, so we're good to go there. But the ACC chassis, which of course stands for Adjustable Core Competition Chassis, allows me to set up weight to offset the fact that we have a relatively thin barrel up here. So I can add weight to the forend and balance the gun out really well. And I've got it set up just to where I like it. Now, the Tika T1X does have options for aftermarket barrels, so we can put a heavier barrel on here and remove some of our weights, and we may do that a little bit later in 2020. We've got a couple of manufacturers that produce barrels for the T1X that have asked us if we'd like to take a look at them, and so we'll see how that goes going forward. But the barrel on the T1X, the factory barrel, works out perfect in that the threading ends just, or the threading starts just inside of the forend of the rifle. So running the Gemtech Outback suppressor that I have on here now is perfect. It fits just right. I would almost like to see how this would work if I cut about 3 or 4 inches off the barrel and brought the suppressor back further in. But I don't know if I want to go to that trouble. But I do have barrel weights in here, and the barrel weights are down, or the forend weights are down far enough that I can run pretty much a full bull barrel and still clear the weights. Additionally, I have side weights on here, and the side weights also have a QD slot in them. So I can run my sling on either side, so if for some reason they come up with some devilish support side, sling supported stage, I can flip my sling to the opposite side and sling up just fine. Additionally, and this is one of those that there is a little bit of an argument in the NRL 22 right now, and we'll see when they release the rules for next year how they address it. But Arca rails have been a big arguing point here lately. Now, the ACC has an Arca rail built in, and for the purposes of NRL 22, most of what I've been doing is just attaching a bipod to it. This is the Skyline bipod. We've also been working with the MDT Skypod. So the Arca rail allows me to mount that bipod, and then, of course, I can slide the bipod to really wherever I want to put it at, and then lock it back down, and it's quick and easy. It's also very quick, since I've got a lever on side here, to just unscrew it. It's a podlock style lever, to just unscrew it and jettison the bipod if I need to get it off the rifle quickly. So I like the fact that with the Arca rail integrated into the chassis here, it's there when you need it. It's not if you don't need it. If for some reason you want to run just regular Picatinny, then we've got M-lock slots all down through here, so you can put a Picatinny rail on it. You can run a direct mount M-lock bipod like the Magpul bipod if you wish. So there are a lot of options there, but I like the Arca rail bipods. It makes it easy to go between different accessories on the rifle. So hopefully when we go forward in NRL 22, they will leave Arca rails as accessories you can use in open class. I really don't care if they remove them from the base class side of things, since most rifles out there right now don't come from the factory with an Arca rail on them. But if it's only being used to mount a bipod, I really don't see how an Arca rail is any different than a sling stud or a Picatinny rail. But that's just my argument there. And of course, the biggest thing about the chassis is we have adjustable comb, adjustable length of pull, adjustable butt pad height. I can get this thing dialed in exactly how I want it. I can even dial in my reach to the trigger guard. Now, of course, it is the most expensive piece of the rifle. We're looking at about $1,000 for the chassis system. But, you know, it's the part that connects the rifle to your body. So it is arguably one of the most important parts of the rifle itself. The trigger in here, I already explained, this is the factory T1X trigger. I did try another manufacturer's aftermarket two-stage trigger, and I found that I could not get the pull weight as light as I could on the T1X. We're hovering a little bit over 1 pound on the trigger, and it's very, very nice when you get into an unstable position and you have to pull that trigger and you really don't want to upset the sight picture. Having a light, very crisp trigger is an excellent thing. Now, obviously, a 1 pound trigger is not something that you would really want on a cold weather, hard use, or a duty rifle, but it works great here. There are very few times in NRL 22 competition where I'm shooting with gloves on, and if it is a really cold match, then the gloves that I'm shooting with are usually very, very thin gloves, so I don't have any problems with compressing insulation before breaking the trigger. So the trigger, I went back to the stock trigger. I don't really see a lot of reason to change it out unless you just really, really want a two-stage trigger. I may look at some of the other trigger options out there just to let you guys know what is available, but I like the factory Tika trigger. The only issue for me is I like straight triggers, flat face triggers, and this one is not. This is curved and has a little bit of serration to it, but I've shot triggers like this for many, many years, so it really doesn't disrupt me at all. But it is one of the few differences between the feel of this rifle and the feel of my centerfire rifle. Now, one of the big visible differences here is the Sterk Shooting bolt handle. Sterk Shooting is a company out of Australia, and they sent us out their swept ball handle. Now, the standard Tika handle comes straight out to the side, and it has a rather smallish bolt knob on the end of it. Now, the nice thing about it is you can remove it just with one screw right down the center of the bolt knob, and the knob and lever comes off as one piece. The Sterk swept knob actually uses a really novel design to install it, since the only way to attach the bolt handle to the bolt on the T1X is to run a screw directly through the end. Obviously, that wouldn't work with a swept handle like this. So the handle is actually a two-piece design. There is a little stud here that screws onto the actual bolt, then the swept portion of the bolt handle slides into there, and then there's another screw that comes up through the bottom that screws the second half of the handle and the ball onto that. Once you get it all on and Loctite it down, it's fairly robust. It's been on there for quite some time. Now, I say fairly robust, but bear in mind, this is a rimfire, so it's highly unlikely that you're going to run into a situation with a stuck case where you're going to have to pound on the bolt handle. That usually doesn't happen with rimfires. With this design, I might not want to do it for a Magnum centerfire rifle, because that design looks like it might be prone to failure if you start whacking on it or kicking it with your foot. But on the rimfire, the design works great. Now, I believe Sterk does make the same style of bolt handle for the T3. However, bear in mind that the mounting system between the T1X and the T3 are vastly different, so the bolt handles are not interchangeable between the two. So if at a later point I get a T3X and we start doing something with that, this bolt handle, the T3 version of it, will be on my short list, because I really, really enjoy running it. The shape of the ball and where it is positioned makes it very, very quick to run. And when you're running a bolt gun in a timed composition, anything that smooths out that bolt throw and gets you going quickly is a nice thing to have. So thank you very much to Sterk for sending that out to us. And we will leave a link to our website down below where we list the prices and locations to purchase all of these various different components. Unfortunately, we can't just leave it in the description because quite a few of the places to go to pick these parts up also sell firearms, and that's a violation of YouTube's terms of service. So we've got to make you go to our website to see the link to where all these things are located at. So, the bolt handle is great. We are also running a Sterk Shooting bolt shroud. Now, there really isn't a lot of reason to replace the bolt shroud. The factory Tika shroud is plastic. It's fairly attractive, but again, it is plastic, and Sterk makes this very nice-looking aluminum bolt shroud. So that works great. They also sent us out one of their titanium knurled thread protectors. Obviously, we're not running that right now because I am running the Gemtech Outback. Originally, my argument was that there's no reason to run a suppressor in NRL 22 because it adds length to the rifle. So that's extra motion that I have to do to come in and out of barricades. The suppressor is obviously, because it's an aluminum rimfire suppressor, it is obviously more prone to damage from impacts than just a solid barrel. And in this case, the suppressor extends beyond the fore end of the chassis, so the suppressor can take a hit. Whereas if I was just running the thread protector, the chassis protects most of the barrel, and it's very unlikely that the barrel itself would actually take a hit. So for all those reasons, I was originally just running a thread protector. But then the reason I switched over to the suppressor is twofold. One, the most glaring reason is it's quiet. I can go up and I can shoot this rifle now through the course of fire with no ear pro at all. And we have quite a few suppressed rifles on our line. So I don't need to run ear pro. That is very enjoyable when you're used to shooting centerfire competitions where everyone is running a break and you're just getting pounded all day long. That definitely adds into the fatigue of the overall match. So being able to go to a match where you can carry on a conversation behind the line, where you don't need ear pro on and everyone is running suppressors, it's just absolutely beautiful. I love it. So I've started running the suppressor on it. And then the second thing is, I've run into some situations with the last couple of rain matches where I am beginning to wonder if rain in the first, the last inch or so of the barrel is starting to affect that fouling and cause some deviations in my velocity. Now, bear in mind here, you don't have a lot of velocity to work with to begin with rimfire ammunition. This is all subsonic ammunition. So when you start removing a little bit of that velocity, if it's not consistent, it may have some pretty significant effects at 100 yards, and that is generally where I was seeing the problem, between 75 and 100 yards. So I ran the suppressor. I've also run through some different ammunition tests, so it's not completely, you know, environmental effects. I was getting some pretty significant SDs on the ammunition that I was testing. And we'll talk about that in another video because it is a pretty in-depth topic. But the suppressor helps protect that little bit of last barrel, a little bit of last rifling from the environment, because it's highly unlikely rain is going to work its way all the way up in here and get into the actual barrel. Usually, we have our guns staged on the benches pointing downrange, so they sit horizontal. They're not in racks with the muzzle up, so I'm not going to get anything running down the barrel. So that is the reason I've switched over to the suppressor. I absolutely love shooting suppressed 22s. It gives you a giggle anytime you pull the trigger, and the rifle makes less noise than the bullet actually impacting the steel downrange. Now we'll come back and we'll talk about the scope base real quick. Because the Tika does utilize a rail, it does not have a standard Picatinny scope base. You do need to switch over to a Picatinny scope base if you're going to use standard Picatinny rings. And so we are using a DI Products scope base. There are quite a few out there. There's Area 419, which would be my next choice, but the DI Products scope base is very affordable. We went ahead and just purchased it. I didn't call them to try to get it to send out. It mounts very well because it uses the dovetail to slide onto the receiver, and then it has screws that go down through the top of the receiver, so it's secured on there. It is not going anywhere. Then on top of that, we have Weaver brand tactical Picatinny rings mounting our scope on here. Again, this is a rimfire. It is not taking a lot of abuse. It is not taking a lot of beating. I may upgrade the rings at a later point, but really the rings came with the scope. When Bushnell sent the Forge out to us, they sent along the Weaver Picatinny rings. They're not my favorite, but they work. And if they work, then, you know, there's very little reason to spend a ton of money replacing them if you don't have to. Lastly, we will talk about the Bushnell Forge rifle scope. This is a 4.5 to 27 power variable optic. We do have parallax that cranks all the way down here to 25 yards. This is really necessary for NRL 22 competition. I like to see scopes that go down to 25. There are some guys out there that are using scopes that only go down to 35. You can get by with that. You will normally not be able to run a maximum magnification at 25 yards, but rarely ever do we shoot at maximum magnification at 25 yards. The last match, most of what I was shooting was in that 10 to 15 power range. So you don't have to go all the way to the top, but when you have a 100 yard paper stage, being able to go all the way up to 27 or even higher is an advantage. Now, the Forge does have some features that are not really needed on an NRL 22 rifle. For one thing, the Forge has zero stops built into it. Rarely ever are we on a second revolution when we're shooting 22s in an NRL 22 stage. Now, if you are shooting a long range 22 match where you're going out to 300 yards or possibly beyond, then a zero stop may be a good idea because you're starting to spin that turret a little bit more. You don't want to get on the wrong side of your zero. But for regular NRL 22 competition. It's not a big deal. These do have locking turrets, so they are pull and push locking, which I do like. I really enjoy that because there's less chance, especially with the windage turret, of rolling it on a barricade. When you are moving in and out of positions, there's less chance of bumping a turret and knocking it off of zero or off of the setting that you had it on. So the ability to dial it, lock it down, and be done is really, really nice. Now, I do like the fact that they are very smooth to get out, dial, and then lock back down. There are a lot of scopes on the market right now that when you go to lock it back down, you have to jiggle it a little bit to get it to lock in. And that's just annoying. It runs into a situation where you may not have actually locked the turret all the way down, and it can run into all kinds of problems later on. The parallax is very smooth and very quick to operate, which that is actually more critical than smooth adjustment turrets on here. In NRL 22, you're bouncing that parallax knob around quite a bit, especially when you start to get into the higher magnification levels. I find that on quite a few stages, I am actually dialing the parallax more than I am doing any other adjustment on the scope. Usually I can zero it out. If we're running, say, a 25, a 50, a 75, you know, a 86 and 100-yard target, whatever they decide to do on the stage, you are definitely going to have to make a parallax adjustment between that 25 and that 100-yard target. If you try to swag it without doing it, it's going to be a miss because it's just going to be a big old nasty blur. Even if you start cranking your magnification down, it's going to be a problem. So having a parallax turret that is very stiff is problematic. Having one that you can very quickly and easily move without disrupting the rifle's position is very nice. So I'm glad that they put that in and made it as smooth as it is. I can really just index finger and thumb and dial it very quickly. Last match, I came over the top and I was dialing it with my strong side hand over the top of the scope. So it was kind of an odd position to be in, but I could see through the scope. I could get it dialed in to where the target was crisp and then engage it very rapidly. I am running a scope shade and caps on the Forge. They do come with the Forge, so that is a really nice thing, especially in the rain. Having the sunshade keeps a lot of water off your objective lens and can make things just a little bit nicer. The caps, they are pretty standard Butler Creek style caps. They work. They're quick to pull on and off, so if you have a stage where the caps are going to be in the way, then you can strip them off and run without the caps. I do like the fact that they have included a cattail on the magnification ring. This is really, really a great thing to have. Now, it works well on the bolt-action rifle for a right-handed shooter because my bolt handle is on the right side, and at 4.5, my cattail is all the way down here at about the 7 o'clock area. Now, if I crank the magnification all the way up, the cattail is way up here. So again, it's out of the way when I run the bolt handle. Now, unfortunately for you lefties, if you swap the side that the bolt handle's on, when the magnification is all the way down at 4.5, the cattail may get in the way for you. I'm not often running that low. I'm usually in that 8 to 10 range, and with the Tika, since the bolt handle sticks right out to the side, it's not really that big of a deal. If you are running a standard 90 degree action where the bolt handle is going to be fairly high, then it's just something to keep in mind. You may not be able to run the cattail on a left-handed action. So I'm not going to go into too much more on the scope. Like I said, we do have zero stops in it, locking turrets. It checks all the boxes. It's a first focal plane reticle. This is a mil scope with a mil reticle. So it's just great to use overall. That is really about it for the overall rig that I am running for the NRL 22. Now we're going to talk about base class rifles here really quickly. The Reason I like the Tika is because you can start in the base class. You can shoot it a little bit, decide if you like NRL 22, and then you have a path to upgrade, because really it's not intended for you to stay in base class for multiple seasons. It's intended for you to get in, get a feel for competition, and then move on up. So the Tika allows you to get into that with a very accurate rifle that obviously has plenty of room for advancement. So plenty of room to modify. There are quite a few chassis systems out there, since all of the chassis for the T3 will fit the T1X. Then it's just a really, really great option. It has one of the best triggers that I have seen for these type of rifles. Now, obviously, you can't compare it to biathlon rifles, the Olympic level rifles that are way up there in price. But for anything that would qualify as a base class rifle, the trigger on this thing is just absolutely amazing. When you compare it to, for instance, the CZ-457, which we will be doing a full review of the CZ-457 very soon, it has a thinner barrel than the 457. The 457 will utilize 455 barrels, so there are already quite a few options out there for it, although the chassis is not interchangeable with the 455. There are more chassis available for the Tika, although they are catching up with the 457. A lot of the companies that make NRL 22 style chassis systems or centerfire chassis systems are spinning up for the 457, so it's rapidly catching up. But out of the box so far, and we haven't completed our testing, it looks like the Tika may be a little bit more accurate than the 457, and the trigger in the Tika is better than the 457. Now, the 457 is not a bad rifle. We got the Varmint Pro, so it comes in a Boyd's laminate stock that is just textured black. A very attractive rifle. Overall, it is a solid rifle. There's nothing really plasticky or anything that feels toyish on it, which unfortunately you get with a lot of rimfire guns. So I like the rifle overall, but I think the Tika may be a better option for a base class shooter. And if you shoot a T3 in centerfire competition, it's a no-brainer. You should go with the T1X. So then the other big base class rifle that we look at is the Ruger Precision Rimfire. And that is what I have set up as a loaner base class rifle. That's what the Match Pro is on right now. And the Ruger, just the fit and finish is miles below what the fit and finish on the Tika was. The Tika came out of the box smooth. The bolt is lightning fast. There was really nothing to pick on as far as the machining and the build quality on it. The Ruger, it came out of the box with machining chips still in it. It was rough. The bolt is still stiff after quite a few hundred dry fires later and a couple of range sessions. The Ruger has the benefit if you are dealing with smaller statured shooters. Again, your young guns, your female shooters. Right out of the box, you have a adjustable stock that has quite a range of length of pull. So you can collapse that stock down really small to get a younger shooter dialed in. And as they grow, you can increase the length in that stock. You can't do that with the Tika or the CZ-457. The CZ-457, you have to cut the stock to reduce the length of pull, and then you would have to put spacers in or some nonsense like that as they grow. As a loaner rifle, I like the Ruger Precision Rimfire because it is accurate enough to compete with in NRL 22 base class, and the stock allows me to very quickly adjust it to a different shooter. So it doesn't have to stay dialed in for me all the time. It's really quick to dial in. Now, obviously, this gun, I can do that as well. It's very quick to dial this in for another shooter. But I'm very cautious here lately with when we have new shooters showing up to try to get them on something like this right away, because this is a considerable investment. Even guys that are already invested in a fairly expensive multi-$1,000 centerfire rig may not be ready to buy into a multi-$1,000 rimfire rig. So we have to be careful when we get them in and we want to show them the neat fancy toys. I have no problem with anybody that wants to shoot my rifle. Shooting my rifle, even in the same competition where we're just handing the gun off side by side, That is not a big deal for me. But again, making somebody believe that they need this to compete, that can be a problem and that can scare them away. So I like to be able to bring that Ruger Precision Rimfire in. It is already ready for a suppressor. The trigger is adjustable, although it's not the greatest trigger on the face of the planet. I really hate that little blade in the middle of the trigger. There are a variety of options with it, and the Ruger Precision Rimfire also has room to grow into open class. You have replacement triggers, which are still base class legal. You have replacement barrel options out there. Obviously, the sky is the limit on the scope. The only thing you really kind of locked into right now is chassis. What it comes with is what it is. You may be able to swap out the tube, although I don't really see any reason to do that as an M-lock tube. So if you wanted to put an ARCO rail on it or stops or whatever, then you can already do that on the fore-end tube that is out of the box on the rifle. But that plastic buttstock, you're kind of stuck with that right now. I don't know anyone that has come up with a replacement lower half for the Ruger Precision Rimfire, and my suspicions tell me that any lower half buttstock assembly that someone would come up for that would be significantly more expensive than the actual rifle cost out of the box. So I don't know where we're going to go as far as modifications for that, but there are quite a few other mods out there available for the Ruger Precision Rimfire. Initial quality aside, don't be afraid to get into that. I think it is a great young guns rifle because the balance is nice. They are relatively lightweight. I've seen the young guns be able to throw the gun around fairly efficiently without any problems. And of course, you can crank that length of pull out a little bit further and adult shooters can get on the gun with no problem. So that is my meandering rambling about my NRL 22 open class rig and some options for base class rifles right now. And that's going to do it for this Mail Call Mondays. That is the last Mail Call Mondays for the 2019 season, and I appreciate you guys sticking with us through 8 whole seasons of Mail Call Mondays. I never would have believed that this show would go this far when I had the wild idea to try to do a weekly episode. Thank you very much for sticking with me. I really could not do this without your input. Trust me, I read every single comment that you guys post down there. Sometimes I don't have time to reply to every single one, especially if it's already answered in the video, but I try to reply to as many as I possibly can. And I greatly appreciate your participation in this thing that we're doing. If you guys want to know how to support the content that you know and love, we would love to have you over on Patreon. We do some inside behind the scenes stuff on Patreon, and coming up this next month, towards the end of January, we will be heading to Las Vegas for the Shooting, Hunting, and Outdoor Trade Show, and I am planning on doing some exclusive content on Patreon while we are down there at the show. So make sure you head over and check out Patreon if you want to take part in that. If you guys have any questions or comments over anything I've covered on this Mail Call Mondays, drop it in the comments section down below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe, and make sure you click that little bell icon to be notified when we release new content. We do try to release new videos every single week, so clicking that little bell will let you get notified about the latest videos as soon as they come out. And until next time, get out and shoot!